Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. Obviously, there's a ton going on today, unless you're just jumping on board. We'll get you caught up on things that are on my mind. Dan Bickley is going to be with us here in studio. Dan's got a cool event that's coming up on AZ Central. We partner with AZ Central, and Eric and I said, let's bring Dan on in here, and he can talk about his event that's coming up on Monday night. He's got all four of the owners of the major teams together in one room. And so he's going to have that event. We'll talk to Dan about that, but also things going on around the Cardinals here at this this midpoint of the offseason. I watched Kobe last night, obviously, and I watched the Warriors, and I watched the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks, it's getting chippy. Yesterday we said on this show that expect something. I didn't expect Chip Hale to go off, and that's gotten lost today in the cycle because of Kobe, obviously. And then this major trade that came down today in the NFL draft. So there's four real big stories. There's some other stuff that I think is interesting. I'm going to talk about Nike's influence last night on Kobe Bryant and how they went about their marketing. And you probably didn't even realize it or think about it, but that's just how brilliant Nike is. So we'll get into that. Dan's going to be at 10:35 with us. But I want to, and Kobe is the biggest story. It's bigger than the NFL draft. For some of you, the NFL draft is your thing. Kobe's bigger than that. A guy that's 37 years of age just to be able to jack up 50 shots, and people are ripping on him for that, and score 60 points. I can't think of a better exit. Now, John Elway winning a Super Bowl, that was a great exit. Derek Jeter, a walk-off hit, that's a good exit. Big markets. So we'll get into that stuff as the show moves on as well. And I read Paul Coro believes that the Suns are going to promote their interim coach. I don't even know what to say. I'm just speechless when I see what's going on here. Let's think out of the box again. How's that worked out? 6 years of not missing the playoffs. Of missing the playoffs, I should say. All right, so let's get into this this trade. So Tennessee decides that they're going to trade their number one overall pick. They do it last night. Jeff Fisher said because of Kobe Bryant, they held off to announce it to this morning. That's very nice of them to do and to let Kobe have his due. Unlike USC thinking Lynn Swann is a big deal as their AD yesterday morning, which was just absurd, and they let that out. You could announce Lynn Swann up 3 months from now, and nobody's going to care, unless you're a Trojan football guy. But the Titans trade their number one overall pick to the Rams. The Rams end up getting the number one pick, and are they going to take Carson Wentz or are they going to take Jared Goff? Now, and we talked about this with Lee Steinberg about a month ago, that the quarterback of the football team in Los Angeles is going to make millions and millions of dollars and never even throw a football for those millions and millions of dollars. They will market him to death. To think that the NFL isn't thrilled that they have their football team on Hard Knocks and that now they have the number one overall pick, it certainly has to make you think in the back of your head that the league was hoping that this would happen or encourage this to happen. I will even go that far to say that they would encourage this sort of thing. But the bottom line is the Rams have the number one pick, and it's interesting to us here in Arizona because, of course, the Rams are in the same division as the Cardinals. Now, who they're going to take at number one, whether it's Goff or Wentz, the bottom line is whoever it is in a pretty good situation. I will equate it to Joe Flacco when Flacco was taken by the Ravens. And people were like, who is this Joe Flacco kid out of Delaware? All Joe Flacco had to do was not turn the football over. He could turn around and hand it off, and he had a great defense. And whoever the Rams decide to take with the number one overall pick, whether it's Wentz or Goff, all he has to do is turn around and hand the football off because the Rams have a really good defense. If you watch the Rams in games within the NFC West in the last few years, they gave teams in the NFC West fits. They could play and beat Seattle. They could split with Arizona. It's not like they're that far away. So while you might be looking at this saying, what a king's ransom that the Rams gave up, well, they've had a lot of picks in the top three, top four rounds over the last several years. Go back and look it up. If it's me and I've got to trust, I can only go off of what I've seen more in person or on tape or talking to. Eric and I talked to Jared Goff and had a nice long visit with Jared Goff last August at Pac-12 Media Day. Pretty quiet, unassuming kid. Handled his business the right way. Then during the season, we watched him quite a bit. And yeah, he's able to sling it. And he's able to keep the play alive. He's got that ability, just like what you're seeing right here. And when you make plays like that, it's pretty darn good. Do they have enough up front? Remember, all he has to do is turn around and hand the football off to Todd Gurley. You can turn around, hand the football off to Todd Gurley 20, 25 times a game and have success. You're going to be all right. So the Rams, yeah, they gave up a steep price. If it's Carson Wentz, so Carson Wentz to some is rising. How much of that is the misinformation era, the North Dakota State quarterback? I mean, there's talk about Jared Goff having too small hands and this guy hasn't had enough competition against big-time teams. It doesn't matter to me. Again, that's Joe Flacco-esque. You play Delaware and then you go into the National Football League. And I've seen plenty of quarterbacks that have had big-time competition that have come into the league and fallen flat on their face and failed. From a business standpoint, this is terrific news for one of these two young men because the endorsements, and the day after Kobe leaves, the new face of LA sports is going to be this quarterback. It just is. The league is going to make sure, doesn't matter how bad they are, we're going to see more Rams stuff in the next, when the schedule comes out later today, we're going to see more Rams national games, we're going to see more Rams angles than we're going to see out of anybody else because the league does not want LA to fail. They're going to make sure LA wins. This is not good for Arizona. Why is that? If you're trying to attract free agents and it comes down to you can play in Los Angeles or you can play in Arizona, we have plenty of advantages being over here, but the marketing and endorsement dollars are not there here in Arizona. They're just simply not. But you're a one-hour plane flight away. I can make the case that a player comes into this city can make the same amount of money as he is in Los Angeles and have a better quality of life. I can make that case. I'm one of those guys that's come over here and I've had a better quality of life. I'm not an NFL quarterback as opposed to being in Southern California, so I'm glad I'm not over there. So all this stuff's really interesting to me that it would come down today. What does this do to the rest of the draft? If you're Tunsil, you were this tackle that was supposed to be the number one overall pick. You're not going to take a tackle at number two. Cleveland has Joe Thomas. San Diego, I don't know if the Chargers can convince the fans there that we're going to take a tackle. That's going to get everybody excited. Dallas, they're fine at left tackle. So as you go down the list of who has the players, this kid could go from yesterday, I'm going to be number one pick. I don't know, six, seven, end up in Baltimore maybe. It's really interesting as to what happens to him. And for those of you that like doing mock drafts every day, congratulations. Now you can tear up all your ones from previous weeks and redo all of them because now everything is in play. If you're Robert Griffin III off this deal, you have to look at it and say, maybe I'm in pretty good shape here to be the starting quarterback in Cleveland. Maybe I am. Because the quarterbacks, can Cleveland afford to take another young quarterback who may well get his head kicked in if Jared Goff can't play well in cold weather, if he does have small hands, and Carson Wentz does go number one. All this is out there. All this is in play. If you're a team that was looking to trade up potentially and try to get a quarterback, if you're the Denver Broncos, let's say now, I would think that you'd have to be in conversations with Lee Steinberg and figuring a way out to get Paxton Lynch now more than ever. This is a real game changer to the whole shape of the draft. And I go back to, on the Cardinals end of things, trade down, Steve. Trade down. You know this. Do what the Rams or do what the Titans did. If you're Tennessee, you've got six of the top 73 picks in the draft. Six. So you're in great shape. I mean, I like this deal for Tennessee, and I understand where the Rams are on this one. Everybody likes to say, good deal, bad deal. If I'm the Rams, I need a quarterback. How many more years am I going to have to sit here and keep drafting really good interior linemen or game changers on the defensive side of the football? They've got more than enough defense, but they need a quarterback. I'm going to talk about Mamba Day and Kobe and much more on the other side. Then Dan Bickley in about 10 minutes back on the NFL with the Cardinals. He'll be joining us here in studio. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat. We'll be right back. Later on in the show, there is a new story that has come out on the worst jobs in America. And we have two of them right here in our building. Two of them. So I'm going to get into that as the show moves along. I happen to think that what we do is important and fine, but did you see this story, by the way, Eric?
I did. Yeah, I did. I did. It doesn't come as any surprise.
Well,
I
mean, but we'll have this a little bit. If you want to pull that up.
Okay. And I also have the Donald Trump inserting foot in mouth video yesterday in Pennsylvania.
So. That's pretty good.
Yep.
All right. So to Kobe last night. I loved before the game, the tribute that had Chick Hearn sitting with Kobe in the grainy video and Chick being Chick saying, you're going to have 19 or 20 years, right? 20, yeah, at least. And Chick is somebody that was actually a camp counselor of mine back when I was like 19. And so it was just cool to see that. And that the Lakers included so much Chick Hearn. That's what they should do, the voice of the Lakers for so many years. No offense to John Ireland or Bill McDonald, but that's the right way to go about it. He started out 0-for-5. And were you watching, by the way, E?
Yeah, I was watching three different sporting events last night. I was watching Kobe, the Warriors, the Diamondbacks, and occasionally we'd flip it over the hockey game, the Blues game. So
I was in my man cave, and I had the Diamondbacks, and I was flipping back and forth between the Warriors and the Lakers. When he started at 0-for-5, I'm thinking, wow, he's shooting entirely too much, and this is going to be just ugly. And then he finally got his first shot. Were you in the same boat? Like, I don't think I want to see how this is going to end.
He did not start well, and I think at one point he was like 5 of 17 or something like that. But he ended, 22 of 50? So not terrible shooting percentage. And he hit what he did in the last half of the game. I mean, they went on a 17-2 run. He scored 15 points. And, oh, by the way, he also assisted on the only other bucket of the 17 points.
Did the 50 shots bother you?
No.
I think that's one of those that if it's any other game but his last game, I would look at and say, you know, what are we doing here? But credit to his teammates. They all said, you know, let's go. It was not perfect, I guess, is what I'm getting
at. No, but he's playing with a bunch of D-leaguers, so it's not like
there's D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle.
Yeah, but I mean,
Jordan Clarkson, those are pretty good players.
But there's not.
You would take those guys on your team.
But there's not big egos. Kobe is the one ego on the Lakers.
Well, they're not the smartest players, I'll say that. They're not the smartest players. I mean, it wasn't a perfect ending. If you're a Lakers fan, you're thinking, how can you say that? And you're calling me all sorts of names if you're a Lakers fan. If you're not a Lakers fan, you have to be in awe that a guy at 37 years of age shot the ball 50 times in a game. And it wasn't like the Jazz were just standing around saying, we're not even going to put a hand in your face. No, he went after them, drove the reverse pivot. You know, when he's able to make some of those vintage Kobe plays.
And it was nice enough of ESPN to montage together all of his points. This is what we're watching now. So,
well, and these shots, you know, the ones from downtown, that it's when he's able to drive, okay? When he's able to drive, that's what I love seeing about Kobe Bryant. Yeah, it's fine for him to be a spot-up shooter. But I guess as the game progressed, at the start of the game, Lisa Salter said he was going to play 36 minutes and that Byron Scott actually wanted him to play 32 minutes. And so he ended up playing 42 minutes. So somewhere along the way, you had to figure there was a conversation with Byron Scott. I saw this morning a little video take between Shaq and Kobe where Shaq said, go get bleeping 50. And that happened last night. Ending up getting 60. We'll all remember it. We'll all be in awe of it years from now. I was in awe of it, but it wasn't like I'm sitting there saying, wow, this is the best game I've ever seen Kobe Bryant play. At his age, and if you consider the Achilles injury, because the Achilles injury, once the Achilles injury hit, he wasn't the same guy. But 20 seasons and 5 NBA titles. If you're a Suns fan, by the way, and you're still like, I hate that guy, I don't want to hear anything good about that guy, please get over it. The guy's going into the Hall of Fame. He gave you more thrills and moved your emotions. Hate is a really good thing for a fan. It's not a good thing in life, but for 2.5 hours to go out and hate on somebody on the other team and boo them, it's great. Get it out of your system. He gave you that. So, you know, he shot and he shot and he shot after he missed his first five, and he walked off into the sunset. Can I think of a better ending? Well, the season totally blew. He had an awful group around him. And we'll have time to talk about this over the years when we look back on it and say, after he had the Achilles injury, he was never quite the same player. But it was great to see the drama of that. At the same time, the Golden State game was going on. And Steph Curry, if you have not taken the time to watch Steph Curry, if you're one of those, I'm not a basketball guy, trust me, if you're a fan of sports at all, you will be so glued and captivated and mesmerized by watching Steph Curry. All Curry did was hit 10 three-pointers last night. Steph Curry came out and he had, off those 10 three-pointers, he finished the season with 402 three-pointers. 402. And it's the beauty of when he spots up and he's already running down the court whenever he hits some of these threes. I mean, that's almost a half-court shot and he's already backing up. When you have to watch when he just releases the ball and how he goes the other direction, because he knows it's going in. He already knows. And it's a beautiful thing. We're taught, follow your shot. No, he's taught, I'm going back on defense as soon as I release it. He's taught completely the opposite. And it's unlike anything that we've seen. I mean, if when you watch Michael Jordan would make captivating, unbelievable highlight plays. When Steve Nash had the basketball in his hands, when his back wasn't bad and his health was great, you didn't know what Steve Nash was going to do with the basketball, whether it's dribbling, passing the ball. His shooting got better and better as his career progressed. You didn't know what Steve Nash was going to do. You didn't know where his creativity was going to go with. And Steph is that way too. There's times when you watch Steph Curry and he'll make the extra pass. He had a play last night where he had just a little finger roll in the lane. It was just in the middle of his onslaught in the third quarter. Just a little simple finger roll, but it was one of those shots of where did he pull that one out of? And so now as they go into the playoffs, and he was great about it afterwards. Yes, we set the record. Steve Kerr talked about it was something he never thought that he would see. And he should know, part of that Bulls team. Now that we're into the postseason, Curry talked specifically about we've got to go win 16 games. And so to that point, whoever Oklahoma City, however Oklahoma City goes in the postseason, I think they're the only team that can beat San Antonio or Golden State. I really do. When you look at the way that it's stacked up, it should be the Warriors and Spurs. But I don't think you can say for certain that the Thunder are a team that's not going to be a factor. The Clippers, I think that's a mess. I think that's just a hot mess. I think that's probably a situation where Blake Griffin gets moved in the offseason. I'd be stunned if the Clippers were in the finals. I don't see how Doc Rivers is going to be able to get through this if they don't go deep into the playoffs. Memphis, are you kidding me? Memphis doesn't have their best big man. As you go through the teams, it really is about the Warriors and making sure you watch every game the Warriors play. And they could lose a game here in the postseason to start off. They could go down 0-1. It wouldn't surprise me. Of all the pressure, all of the mental energy that they've had to spend just to get that record. And then it's, okay, well, you got the record, so what? You're the defending NBA champions. You got to win 16 more of these bad boys. So it's not like everything is going to be easy street for Golden State. I think there's got to be at some point, some mental just cleansing that's got to come along and that Steve Kerr's got to do the best job possible. There may be a game or two where they get blown out. It would not surprise me at all.
You know what the most incredible thing, Brad, is about Steph Curry? Is you've been out on an NBA basketball court. I have been out on an NBA basketball court.
Yep.
You don't realize how deep the three-point line is until you stand there and you consider how far it is. And of the highlights we just showed, I mean, he's the top of the key. He's 3 or 4 feet behind that, and he's shooting that like you and I shoot free throws.
He's closer to the mid-court.
Absolutely.
Right.
I mean, it's almost like watching a great golfer. They just make it look so effortless. And if you ever went out there and tried to do it yourself, it's far from effortless.
But what I like, Eric, about him is, yeah, he can shoot, and it's fun to watch him from deep. But when he decides to dribble penetrate, wow, his vision is unbelievable.
And if you look in the box score at the end of a game, it'll be Steph Curry, 37 points, but also be Steph Curry, 9 rebounds. Yeah. Steph Curry, 6 assists. Steph Curry, 4 steals.
Well, it was like Kobe last night finishing with 50, and yet he finished with a plus 9 for the game.
It's great.
50 shots. He finished with 50 shots, but he had a plus 9.
And he, like I said, 22 of 50 is not terrible, considering he's shooting a lot of outside shots.
And he was 0 for 5 to start with. Paul Coro had this morning that the arrows are pointing in the direction that Earl Watson is going to be named the coach of the Suns.
And Paul would know.
And Paul would know. Paul would be filled in on that. And again, it's a couple things here. I don't know Earl Watson. I know that within the community, I don't know very many people that are saying, hooray, hurrah, that's the right guy. A, he seems like a nice enough man. I've heard him do some interviews, and he sounds very competent. I'm not judging him in that way. But you've got to attract some people to come to this job to send the message. And after 6 years of not making it into the postseason, come on, Robert, figure it out. That's the thing here. Is this sends a message. This is the best that we can do. We're putting faith in this guy to lead us. Just like, I think Terry Porter is the right coach to be here. I think Lance Blanks is the right guy to lead us. Dan Marley is not fit to be our next coach. Eventually, you would like to see some people that had some background, even if George Karl or David Blatt came here.
Or is that part of the problem? Are McDonough and Sarver reading between the tea leaves and saying, we're not going to be able to get one of these high-profile coaches?
That's the problem, I think. I mean, what are fans supposed to grab onto? If you're going to just tell me for the whole offseason that because Devin Booker's here, all is well, no, it's not. He's a fine player. I'm not discounting that. But you tell me how it's going to work out with Brandon Knight and Eric Bledsoe next year. We're right back to where I don't – is Brandon Knight going to be comfortable being a sixth man? Is Eric Bledsoe following 3 knee surgeries going to be able to do what he's being paid to do? You can't tell Devin Booker, we're going to put you back over on the bench and bring you off the bench. Well, Brad, they're going to have a lottery pick. Yeah, and Alex Len was the 5th overall pick a couple years ago. Anthony Bennett was the number 1 overall pick, and he's a journeyman now. I'm not convinced that Alex Len is worthy of being the 5th overall pick. I'm not saying he's a bad player. Don't put words into my mouth here. But I don't see him as the 5th overall pick in the draft. Nice enough player. A nice player. Not a major impact player. And the only way they're going to get a star player here is to go acquire a guy that's not happy in his current environment. I don't know who that guy is. I don't. But you can't tell me that if you promote Earl Watson, that that's going to send a message of faith and belief among Suns fans, among teams around the NBA, around agents in the NBA. Hey, Phoenix has got it together. We need to send my guy there. I don't want to see this city get used. You know, this city was used back in the day with the Cardinals where the agents would fly them in and get an offer, and they had no intention of coming here and playing. I don't want to see that happen to the Suns. Well, LaMarcus Aldridge might have done that last year to a certain extent. Dan Bickley's next in studio. We'll talk some NFL. That's on the other side. Dan Bickley joins us now, esteemed columnist, AZ Central Sports radio host on 98.7 FM with Vince Murata. And Dan has a very cool event. You have decided to bring out the sledgehammer rather than the fly swatter, which is needed in this day and age of media. And you've got the 4 owners together next Monday night. Let's talk about that right off the top of AZ Central.
Yeah, Monday night at the Sheraton Hotel, 7 o'clock, we've got Anthony LeBlanc, CEO of the Coyotes, Robert Sarver, Ken Kendrick, and Michael Bidwill. So it's basically the 4 owners of the major professional sports teams in town here. And what better time to get them all into a room when 3 of the 4 are looking for a new stadium? We know what kind of headlines that has kind of created over the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Michael Bidwill now has the reigning property in this town by a sizable margin. I mean, there was once upon a time, but I told this story in print the other day. In 2004, Larry Fitzgerald was drafted by the Cardinals. The Cardinals called the Diamondbacks and said, listen, we got this prized hotshot rookie from Pittsburgh. Can he please throw out the first pitch for you guys? Not on opening day, but any day.
Yeah.
And the Diamondbacks said, we're good. We don't need that. And fast forward to 2016, where on one of their biggest opening days in history, who do they turn to? A member of the Arizona Cardinals. The way the market has flipped has been dramatic since 2007. And so we're going to get them all together. We're going to talk about the past, the present, the future, where this whole thing is going.
And, you know, so let's, and that's very cool. And there's more information on AZ Central. We'll talk about it a little bit later on as well. I want to get to you on the Cardinals, and we're halfway through this offseason. And I look around at it, Dan, and we both, I think, would agree that this is the all or nothing, go for broke, as long as Carson is here, and that Carson, we don't know anything until next postseason with Carson Palmer for validity or not. He could go win 14 games this year.
Doesn't matter.
And that's very unfortunate. But I'm just curious from your view, do you like what they've done, and what is the Achilles?
Yeah, I look at them and I don't see any real glaring weakness. I see areas where they need to get better. Their secondary needs to be improved. Some of their offensive line depth, they need a center. But all in all, this is a football team that looks really good on paper. And I think they've addressed their pass rush. I think Chandler Jones is legit. I think he'll have a really good impact on Calais Campbell. And we all know that Calais has kind of been targeted by Bruce Arians the last couple of years. Come on, man. More production. More sacks. Give
it to me. Who's been disappointing? Calais needs to step it up.
Exactly.
Every Monday you hear that.
Every Monday. So maybe Chandler Jones now lifts Calais Campbell up, and maybe that defense really looks fierce. Last year, the defense looked good on paper for most of the year. It never really looked all that great on the field. They had good games, but near the end, they look very vulnerable. So I think that they really addressed that. But you hit on it, man. It's the point with this Cardinal team is the Carson Palmer narrative. And all season long, this is going to be the story lurking in the background. How will this guy handle the next playoff game? Mm-hmm. You remember when the Suns had all those great playoff runs and they would lose in heartbreaking fashion, and then the next regular season was torture just waiting for the playoffs to get back here.
Right.
That's what this season's going to feel like. Get us to the end so Carson Palmer can prove what happened last year in Carolina was a fluke. Let's hope he can handle that pressure.
There's no Mario Elie around. There's no Robert Ori around.
Right.
We're talking on the NBA terms. Bruce Arians in some hot water. I understand where he was going when he's talking about the game is under siege, because it is.
Yeah.
And concussions are real. We've talked about concussions through the years. This is no great secret. The way he went about it and going after the women, I wouldn't even say he was going after them. I think he's been a bit mischaracterized on all this.
Okay.
It's not like, in my view, he just said, they're the problem.
Yeah.
It's, the moms are going to be the ones that decide for the most part.
Yeah.
And single moms can't afford a $400 test.
Right.
So let's not just throw that out there.
Right.
He's done a couple of mistakes here.
It's the sweeping generalization, making it a female problem and not a male problem. That is inaccurate. It was the tone of the way he said, it's the moms. It's the moms. You know, all us males, we know how great football is, but the moms don't get it. It was that he kind of gave that off. He didn't mean that, but he kind of gave that off. But I think what really tied it all together is he prefaced that by saying football is under attack. And then he kind of inferred that moms are to blame here. Football is not under attack. Football is under the age of enlightenment right now, where finally we're getting a real clear picture of what this game does to athletes and to their brains and the damage they can do to people. And we're all beginning to kind of comprehend that, which has led to a lot of choices for people. Are you comfortable as a parent letting your son play this sport? Some are, some aren't. That's fine. Science is being brought to us, and we're all doing with it what we will. For Bruce Arians to come out and say parents who choose that their kids don't play football are foolish
fools.
Yeah. That's wrong. So he's been tone deaf on this issue, in my opinion. But there's a bigger story here. Bruce Arians has brought this up twice now. Peter King went searching for this line of questioning during the owners' meetings. Mm-hmm. Jerry Jones came out and basically said, hey, there's no link from CTE to football. That tells me that somewhere in the NFL, they have hatched a strategy saying, listen, you need to get on message. Everybody in this league needs to get on message about what we're doing to make football safer and about how the perception of football being really dangerous is a little bit wrong. I'm hearing it from too many places, and it all is sounding tone deaf.
Well,
it sounds like they're being ignorant to science.
And John Mara said, even go further at that same owners meeting, I don't think we're doing enough. The number of concussions went up last year, and I'm not hearing enough conversation. John Harbaugh to Peter's interviews was the first one that stepped up and said, our game is under attack. And then Peter went to Bruce, and we go from there. I don't know if this is going to die down or not. Do you?
I don't think it matters. I mean, last year I was more aware of the damage football does to people, and I was more in love with the game than ever before. Mm-hmm. I don't think the American public are having big morality issues watching the game of football. I don't think we're watching in the shadows of guilt going, oh my God, I can't believe I'm supporting this sport that just annihilates these young men. I don't think we're having those issues. I think we know football's a dangerous game. The people who choose to play it are making an agreement up front. They all know it. As much as they want to say they don't know it, they know going in, I'm going to play this very violent game. I may get injured. I may get horrifically injured, but I'm going to do it because I love it and because it pays me a lot of money, and that's never going to change.
Other side of that, though, when you see a Jim McMahon or you see Phil and the player and you know that they are struggling with life issues, do you think there should be more done? When the NFL concussion settlement was less than $1 billion, I mean, it just said to me, these guys don't really care about these players top to bottom. And if you talk to the players, they'll go into the, we don't have health care. We don't have post-retirement. So I look at the NFL and say, are you guys really doing enough? It certainly doesn't look like
Listen, and here's the thing about it. You look at Jim McMahon, you look at that era of football player who played, guys who were having a hard time driving to the grocery store without getting lost. Those guys played at a time when football was dangerous, but not like it is now. There's going to be another generation of football players like Jim McMahon, and it's going to be even worse. The quote-unquote butcher's bill for CTE and concussions, I think you're going to see another generation, maybe two, of players who have left the game after guys like Jim McMahon who are even in worse condition. And I think the numbers are going to be even greater. And I think that's why you're seeing a handful of guys actively walk away from the game in their prime. There's only been about 10 of them, but that's a lot more than it's ever been in the past.
And so, I think there's even more that are considering walking away.
You know, it's funny because the NFL, people will tell you this, the NFL employs lawyers, PR people. This is their defining issue. How do we grow this game at a time of incredible popularity while kind of managing this PR crisis that is simmering all around us? And that's what this is.
Okay, Tyrann Mathieu, in the middle of the Will Smith death and him stepping forward, love his passion, very concerned about just what goes on back in New Orleans and that he brings that up. What do you make out of Tyrann Mathieu's last
one? I love Tyrann Mathieu's conviction. I love the fact that he has taken his persona and now he realizes, oh my God, I really have incredible reach.
Yep.
And now he wants to do something with it. Back in the day when I covered Michael Jordan, there were a lot of people who said, Michael, why don't you stand for something? Why don't you use your enormous clout and just help somebody or give it to a group that needs, you know, your kind of power? And his response would be, no, I got to sell hot dogs. I got to sell underwear. No, I'm cool. For Tyrann Mathieu to get involved in something like this, especially when you've already seen the ramifications, you know, there were people, family members and friends of the guy that Tyrann Mathieu went after on Twitter, the shooter of Will Smith, who have given Tyrann death threats. So he's walking into a dangerous neighborhood. Metaphorically and literally.
Yeah.
And so I admire his conviction. And I think he's got this idea that, okay, you know what? I've got the skill to play football, but I've also got this personality that people love. And I've got this voice that people listen to. And I'm going to use it. I hope that everybody on the team is cool with it. I hope that people don't think, oh, there goes Ty again, looking for a camera to talk to. I hope it never gets to that. I don't think it will because Tyrann is all passion and his teammates love him dearly. And I think we all do. And so for now, I'm going to applaud his courage and his conviction. And you know what? If he brings social change for the better, more power to him.
I think he's right there with Larry Fitzgerald in terms of popularity in our community.
Close.
He's right there.
Yeah, I think he can get there. I think Fitz is in another level altogether because he's been here so long and done so many great things and always said the right thing. He just... Fitz reaches everybody, and I think he's on a level that'll be hard for anybody in the next 20 years to get to. Paul Goldschmidt might get close, depending on where his career goes. Tyrann Mathieu, if he stays healthy, might get close, but Fitz has set the bar pretty high.
Is this it for him, in your opinion?
No. I talked to him on opening day,
You know, Kent sat right here 2 weeks ago and thinks this is it.
He does.
You disagree.
I don't. No. No, I really don't. And I think he's going to want to keep on playing. The way he sounded when I spoke to him opening night was like, no, I feel really good. This team is really good. I know I can play. No, I'm not looking at this like Kobe looked at his last season, where this is a farewell tour for me. I don't think so. Could change, you know?
Sure.
If he doesn't get the ball a lot, if he gets hurt, if something changes next season. But no, I think Larry's going to keep pushing it.
Last question, and that is, the draft is in 2 weeks. What do you want to see out of this team?
Oh, wow. Couple things. Number one, I would love for them to get their hands on Scooby Wright somewhere lower down. I think he would fit perfectly in that defense. I think he'd wear that Cardinal uniform, and I think he'd be a really good guy to kind of like bring in. That's just an ancillary thing for me. I'd like to see them take a shot on a quarterback. I'm really intrigued by this Cardale Jones from Ohio State kid, because even though he only started 11 games in college, he never lost, and he's got all this swagger that Bruce Arians loves. I'd be fine if they got a center with the first round pick at number 29. I think they're probably going to trade down to acquire some picks in the second round.
Trade down.
Well, here's the theory.
That's a smart move.
Here's the bottom line. If you've got to replace Carson Palmer, and if you've got to do it by taking a flyer on a quarterback every year, then you need enough picks to give you that luxury of taking that flyer. The only way you do that this year is by trading out of number 29, going getting a second round pick and an extra pick and trying to build them up like that.
Okay, before you get out of here, Monday night, talk about a little bit more.
Yeah.
What are you going to lead with when you're talking to...
It's going to be an inquisition, Brad.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Meaning?
Sledgehammer. No. No, we're gonna cover the real stuff. We're going to talk about owning a sports team in Phoenix. How do you cope with this market that's so fickle and full of transplant fans? And, you know, three of the four teams have stadium issues. One team is pursuing a Super Bowl. The Diamondbacks are screaming for relevancy, trying to get back there. The Suns haven't been to the playoffs in 6 years. There are people who believe if the Suns ever get their act back together, Phoenix will revert to a basketball town. Jerry Colangelo believes that. Yeah. I don't know if I believe it anymore. Now that we're an NFL town and a football town, I don't know if we ever go back from that. But I do know that Jerry thinks that the Suns could get back. So you know what? There's a lot of issues facing these guys trying to make sense of a market, a four-sport market that's very, very hard to define.
It's good
stuff.
We're
very different.
Good stuff there.
Thank you, Brad.
Dan Bickley in studio. Appreciate the time.
You're welcome.
And that is on Monday night. You can check it out on AZ Central Sports. We're back with more after this timeout. Brad Sismat, Football AZ continues. One other thing about Kobe Bryant before I get over the Diamondbacks, and that is Nike mentioned this off the top. Yesterday, they called it Mamba Day. Yesterday, Nike launched or had Mamba Day gear, okay? And if you notice, Nike markets all their people by first name, or at least most of them. So yesterday was Mamba Day, and Tiger, LeBron, Serena, Richard Sherman, Adrian Gonzalez, Yasiel Puig, Mike Trout all wore Mamba Day gear yesterday, all of them. And whatever it was that they were doing on the baseball field, Gonzalez, Puig, and Trout. But so Nike designated Wednesday as Mamba Day, and that caught on nationally. And it's very smart. You don't realize it's even going on around you when you see something trending Mamba Day, or when Kobe finishes with Mamba out and drops the mic. All around us. Really interesting.
Kobe's still trending, by the way, even this morning.
He should be. I still think it's bigger than the NFL trade, but that's just me. And I got to get over to the worst jobs list, too. So let me zip through some of these things. The Diamondbacks lost last night. They didn't play well. There are three errors by them. And De La Rosa only got through 4 2/3 innings. The starters are 0-6. 0-6 with an ERA of 6.61. But there was an exchange during the game where Chip Hale was barking over at Rick Honeycutt, the Dodgers pitching coach. There's already been, by my count, and correct me on this if I'm wrong, Eric, there's already been five players hit by pitches in this series, and we're two games in. And we mentioned yesterday that the two that were inside on the Diamondbacks, Segura and Ahmed, on their hands the other night, that there's going to be some retaliation. And I don't know if it's there yet, but there's already bad blood between these two. Eventually, it's got to just all get out. It might be tonight. It might be Robbie Ray's throwing tonight. But here is Chip Hale asked by Jody Jackson, Fox Sports Arizona, after last night's game in L.A. about the going back and forth between Chip Hale and the Dodger pitching coach, Rick Honeycutt.
Well, I was just, I guess their pitching coach didn't care for their guys getting hit. It was okay yesterday when our two guys got hit in the wrist. But tonight it wasn't right, even though the last pitch that Barrett threw was a slider. So pitching in is part of the ball game. We know that. I'm not going to allow anybody from the other team to yell towards my dugout and whoever he's yelling at. It's not acceptable.
Was he yelling at you?
I don't know who he was yelling at, but just not acceptable.
What was the interaction with the umpire?
No, the umpire just said he gave warnings, which I said, that's great. I understand. You know, that's just the way the game has gone. When guys, a bunch of guys start getting hit, especially yesterday, three guys got hit, I believe, that's what's going to happen. That's fine with me. I told him I don't appreciate somebody from their dugout yelling at me. That's why I'm yelling. I didn't want him to be offended by me yelling across. He goes, I'll take care of it. So that was good. Brian did a nice job.
He's talking about Brian Gorman there, the umpire. So tonight it's Robbie Ray. Eventually what happens is there's a big blow up and everybody gets it out of their system. And then you see if it'll happen later on in the year. These two teams late in the season meet each other a bunch. So to already have it be chippy and we're just two games in, I don't know if tonight it's going to blow up. I'm not saying I'm going to sit there and watch, but I could tell Monday night or Monday afternoon rather, Tuesday afternoon, the first game of the series that there was stuff that was going on and it just escalated last night. So there's that. The worst jobs. So I like what I do. I really do. I love doing Sports 360 AZ. I did not like what I was doing at the end at Channel 3. I didn't. I had a boss that was an ogre. I had people around me that were not into doing their jobs every day. They were mailing it in. They didn't care. It wasn't creative. And the guys that were working alongside of me that did care are beaten down and worn out. And it's pervasive across our industry. It just is. Doesn't matter if it's radio, television, newspaper. People in media aren't happy with what they do, for the most part. So today, the story comes out of the worst jobs, the worst professions that are out there. And what do you know? The worst jobs of 2016 by CareerCast.com. Media is listed as two of the three worst jobs on the top of the list. Two of the three. Newspaper reporter is the number one worst job that is out there. This, again, according to CareerCast.com's 28th annual jobs rated reports 10 worst. They're talking about the environment, the emotional, physical of hours worked, the income, the outlook, the income growth potential, unemployment, 11 stress factors. Writers are the worst, is the worst job to have in our country. Newspaper reporter at number 200 for a third straight year. Broadcaster isn't far behind at the 198th best job. The news business has changed drastically over the years and not in a good way. You can always find somebody that's a former broadcaster that say it isn't what it used to be. I know plenty of them. I like what I do. We have fun here, I think. Eric, do we have fun here?
Of course, we have fun.
Do you? I mean, did you see this list? When I brought it up to you earlier, they just kind of rolled your eyes like, really?
Well, and media is evolving. So are people from the old school disgruntled about how the new school of media goes about their business?
Yes.
Is that why? Okay, is that why? I mean, who's doing, like, I'd like to dig a little deeper into exactly who's voting on these things.
When I hear somebody in our profession say, yeah, all they want me to do is tweet and write a story and I'm just here to do the 5 o'clock news or what, then you should get out because it is changing. And honestly, if you look at when we got into this business, when I got in this business 25, 30 years ago, yeah, it's become really narrow in some places. Some places will tell you straight up, you can only talk about the NFL. That's it. It's the only thing you can talk about because that's all that people care about, which isn't true. There's plenty of other things that are out there. So you just don't go into that environment. The best jobs, if you're wondering about the best professions, professions in mathematics. For the 2016 CareerCast.com jobs report, I can't do 2 + 2, but off the top 10 professions, many of them are math intensive. They deal with metrics. What a shock. We're seeing that as what's taking the broadcast industry down a different direction. Data science, relatively new field, promises to revolutionize industries from business, government, healthcare to academia. Growing number of universities offer data science degree programs. Being in the IT sector, healthcare and business. So, yeah, I saw this story today, and I had some people said, yeah, what do you think about this? It's fine. You can always find people that aren't happy or that they're a former broadcaster and say the profession sucks. I don't think it does. I don't. I still find it to be honorable, and I don't look at this every day as work. Maybe I should, but I don't. Would you like it if I looked at this as work every day?
No, but I mean, you can look at it anyway.
Jared Nielsen wants me to look at this as work.
You can look at it any way you want.
You want me to take this more serious?
I think we do take it serious. We wouldn't have been around for 5 years if we didn't take it serious.
Well, I mean, we
work hard. There's a difference between being serious, having
really
fun, and working hard.
I mean, I get the time demands thing. I get the time demand part of this story. I get that. There are times where you've got to just drop what you're doing if you're really invested in this. And if something happens at 9:30 at night or 9:30 in the morning, yeah, your radar always has to be up. That doesn't make it a bad thing. So, Joe Paterno, I will work this in. So, Joe Paterno, Donald Trump was talking about Joe Paterno and his statue. Some have said, and this is probably those that don't like Trump, that he didn't know that Joe Paterno was dead. Do we have a clip of this? Okay, here it is.
I went to school in this state, right? We know that, right? So I know a lot about Pennsylvania, and it's great. How's Joe Paterno? Are we going to bring that back, right? How about that whole deal? And we do love Penn State. Do we love Penn State? I mean, in all fairness. We love Penn State, but we love Pittsburgh, right?
Okay, so contextually, you see that. He didn't say, how's Joe Paterno doing? He's talking about the statue and the statue coming back. Again, we're in an era where let's make a big deal out of this, where the headline is Trump doesn't know Paterno's dead. Whether you like
it's so misleading.
It's not what he said.
It's not even close.
But of course, if you're watching MSNBC, they're going to spin it one way. And if you're watching Fox News, they're going to spin it another. I'm not spinning it either way. I'm not sitting here saying, because I'm a Trump supporter. You don't know who I'm supporting. But you just look at that on face value and say, come on, really? This is going to be something that people are going to trend about and tweet about. Oh, he didn't even know Paterno's dead. He's talking about a statue. Same people that drive 50 miles per hour in the speed lane at 8 o'clock in the morning. Get out of my life. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussman.